everybody, and thank you again for listening to another episode of Boom Chuck, a drummer's podcast. I am Chris Phillips. I wanted to give a quick shout out to my boy Oz and the band Spira. The song you just heard at the intro is something that never came out. It was something that I had worked on, helped them produce and record back in the day when we all lived in southeastern Michigan and we just kind of farted around doing our stuff there. So shout out to those guys. I hope you're all doing well. My guest this week is someone that I've been wanting to talk to for a while. I was actually able to do a short research study with her over the summer, and we had it on the books for so long, we finally got a chance to talk to each other. You've probably seen her online doing a bunch of different stuff with the Drummer Lab. Without further ado, I'm going to drop you into the conversation that I was having with Dr. Nadia Azar. So yeah, I appreciate you coming on. This is great.
No problem.
You're probably crazy busy, right? Because you just got back from sabbatical, you said?
Well, I'm still on sabbatical.
Oh, nice.
So I'm not like super crazy busy, although it has been busier than I kind of thought it was going to be, but it's good.
That's good.
So I've got 6 months left.
6 months left? Holy crap. So how long did you take off?
A year.
Just because, I mean, obviously you've been working really hard with all the projects you've been doing. Did you finish like a final thing and then you were just like, I need to take a year off and chill out?
I wish. No. So it's the way it works. It's part of like all universities offer this for their professors, because sure. Normally our workload is we do research and we teach and we do service work for the university and for like the different professional organizations we belong to and like all kinds of stuff like that. So what the sabbatical does is we can do it. We can take a year every 7 years.
Okay.
And what they do is we're relieved of all of our teaching and any service work that we have to do for the university. So that frees up our time. The expectation is you either do more research or other forms of professional development. Like if I wanted to take a semester's worth of courses, I could do that or,
right. You
know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So I'm still technically, like, it's not, I wish it was just like vacation for a year. But the expectation is that you're doing other things to fill in that time. It's a year to sort of like progress your research or write a grant or get some papers out or that sort of thing. So that's kind of the interview study has been my biggest piece of what I'm working on this year.
And you're still working on that, right?
Yeah. So I finished interviewing and analyzing the data from your group.
Yeah.
So the group of people who teach primarily independently through their own studios or through like Long and McQuaid or like other music schools like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I have had a really hard time recruiting instructors who teach at university, like through percussion programs or high school music teachers who mainly teach drum set or that kind of thing. Maybe possibly because there aren't that many of them, but so Percussive Arts just sent out another email for me this morning and I'm hoping that I'll start to get more of the actual like university college professors, because I think there will be different barriers. I think there will be different issues that, you know, come with being a professor within a structured program as opposed to being an independent who can kind of do what they want when they want sort of thing. Yeah. So that's sort of where I'm at with that. So I'm starting to, I kind of like paused recruiting at the end of last year just because it was getting close to Christmas. Everyone's busy and all that.
Right.
So now that the new year's starting, I'm ramping up recruitment again to hopefully get those done, you know, by mid-February at the latest.
Nice.
and wrap up that side of the study too.
For the listeners that are going to listen to this, let's start from the beginning. So when you kind of first started this big arc of life to get you to where you are today, doing what you're doing, I guess recap that. There's no time limit. There's no whatever. I mean, it could take the whole time. It doesn't matter. But I think it's fascinating to see where people came from, why they started kind of doing what they wanted to do. And then eventually with you, it's like, why did you pick drums to do the research on? Why did you do all this stuff? So, I mean, really, it's all encompassing from birth to where you are now. Can you summarize that up for all of our listeners?
Yes. Okay. So I am a professor in a kinesiology department at the University of Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
And so my So I'll start with my educational background and then kind of like circle back to a few things. Mm-hmm. So my education is in the science of human movement, mm-hmm. and largely the physics of how people move. So I did my undergrad, my master's at actually the department that I'm currently teaching in. And then I went and did my PhD in a similar field, biomedical engineering, at Wayne State University. Mm-hmm. So my focus for my studies was always on like injury prevention, whether that was preventing workplace injuries, like ergonomics and injury prevention, or my PhD was focused more on automotive industry injuries.
Okay.
So then, you know, I become a professor and I have to have my own research. And I you know, did a bunch of different things kind of leading up to this. But drums have like sort of oddly always been part of my life, even though I haven't really played them that much. So I have two of my uncles were drummers.
Okay.
I ended up marrying a drummer. My husband plays.
Yep.
His brother is an accomplished drummer. He's a professional as well. And I dabbled with it myself. Actually, when I was in sixth grade, I was we moved to South Carolina for a year, and that's the year you start band.
Right.
And I really wanted to, like, the snare drum was an option. I was like, yes, this is what I'm doing. Nice. My parents were like, no, this is not what you're doing.
Right.
mainly because we were going back to Canada the following year, and snare drum wasn't an option in band for us. So they're like, you kind of have to pick something that is. So I ended up playing the flute. But nice. Anyway, so there was that. And then when I was in high school, one of my friend's cousins parked their drum set in her basement for the summer and taught us how to play. And so we just like spent all summer messing around.
Nice.
Anyway, so now I'm a professor and I'm, you know, doing what I do. And I'm a fan. I love rock music.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Dream Theater. And I follow Mike Mangini on Twitter when he was still on Twitter. And he tweeted out something random about, you know, feeling sore from playing the drums and how it's because, not because he's injured, but because drumming is like a boxing type workout.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I can't, this is too good. I can't pass this up. So, cause I didn't really interact on social media at the time. So I tweeted him back and said, you know, I'm a professor. I'd love to study your drumming technique. Message me if you're interested. And he did. And so we started going back and forth. And as I started kind of digging into research on playing the drums, I realized there really wasn't a whole lot, whether that was on injuries or technique or anything. So I was kind of like, wow, I could actually like do something kind of cool and fun and interesting and novel.
Yeah.
And, you know, but like using everything I already know and just applying it to this instead. And so that's what I did. And, you know, fast forward, that was, I think, fall of 2016. So it was, what are we now? A little over 6 years.
Yeah.
6 years since I've kind of taken this on full time as my like main research, and haven't really looked back. It's been so much fun.
And I was like, good on the university too, to where it's like, it sounds like obviously being a musician or having like family members or whatever, like having that people know, like the drummers work the hardest out of anybody because we're four limbs and we're doing all this stuff. Singing drummers like me, even worse, because I have to do breath support and all these other things too, right? So I understand kind of the athletic side of it. Now, granted, I was also a college athlete, so it's like I understand that side of it. But I'll say good on the university for taking this quote-unquote wild idea that you may have and just being like, you're right, I think this is a great idea, and just letting you go. You know what I mean? Like that's I don't even know, convincing to get like department heads and all that kind of stuff like on board to do it?
You know, it really didn't, which I have to give props to my university. I mean, on the one hand, you know, we do have what's called academic freedom.
Sure.
So as long as I'm sort of staying within the bounds of my discipline, I can do whatever research I want as long as I can come up with funding to do it.
Right.
That said, I mean, it involved me getting a drum set. It gets loud in our building now.
Right, right.
You know, it's fairly disruptive. We're not a school of music, so we don't have like soundproof rooms where I can go in and do this and nobody is none the wiser.
Right.
So I do have to give credit to my dean at the time. Was sort of, I told him about this and I pitched it to him and he was kind of like, he kind of chuckled, but was like, I mean, yeah, go for it. You know,
right.
He was on board and supportive. You know, so that's really great. But no, I didn't meet with a ton of resistance. I think partly for those two factors. I think my administrators had an open mind, but also because it was really you know, once I kind of explained how it was in the realm of what we do, mm-hmm. It was sort of like, yeah, I mean, that's a natural
sure.
fit. Just yeah. never really thought about it before.
Right, right. I actually turned on my chiropractor. So they've been fans, right? They go see shows and whatever. And the first show they saw, they came up to me and went, now I know how to treat you. And I was like, what mm-hmm. does that mean? And it's like headbanging. I don't slouch, but I'm a big dude. So like, it's a very, again, you see it. It's a strange movement. So it was a very eye-opening experience for them, kind of in the same board where it's like they kind of see, oh, these this is why I can't crack like all these different things, all these different muscles. They don't see in just the regular people, right? Like for people yeah. that do it like me, that drum every single day, multiple hours a day, whether that's teaching, practicing, performing, whatever, different muscles, you know, get bigger different ways. I mean, I'm not bouncing up and down, luckily. I mean, I know guys that have back trouble because they're bouncing up and down and doing all these crazy things. And it's mm-hmm. it's a lot of different things that we face. I mean, it like pretty much like an athlete. I'm glad there's someone now, you being out there kind of like not forcing the issue, but I feel like it's opening doors. And even like the talk we had, like the drumming related injuries, like everyone thinks like, oh, carpal tunnel. Boom. That's it. It's like, that's not it. Like, yeah. it's a big deal. If you talk to a drummer like Morgan Rose and see all the crap that he's gone through, it's a big deal. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, so there's a definite need out there, which is cool. So I love the fact that this is why I wanted you on so we could talk about it. But, and you had mentioned Wayne State. So I'm from Ann Arbor.
Oh, I think, yeah, you mentioned that.
My in-laws yeah. went to Wayne State. My sister got her farm D at Wayne State. So I've spent plenty of time there. yeah. So luckily where you're at, I mean, for people that don't know, Windsor's right across the river, mm-hmm. right? When you were 19 in the U.S., you could go to Canada and drink. That was our biggest thing. That's why I always went to Windsor.
Yeah.
But I always drove. For my mom listening, I definitely always drove. So like moving forward, so what, when you did all this and you did this, so the drummer lab is not, I guess it's the same thing you're doing, right? Is that just what you put the name to that, right? Like that's kind of is it its own thing or is it affiliated with the school? I mean, the research, is it all kind of all encompassing or is the drummer lab kind of what you're kind of going for as like outside of school, kind of the more educational front of it, not so much in the school of kinesiology?
That's a good question. Nobody's asked me that before. So the drummer lab encompasses all of the work that I do with drummers. So
okay.
as of right now, all of that has been really through my work activities at the university. So through the research,
okay.
Through the data collection, you know, at live shows, through the talks I've given, the research presentations, the workshops, things like that. Is there potentially an avenue for further you know, more private side of it, like through consulting and things like that, maybe, but I have one job already.
Right.
And my kids are getting older and I don't have much time left with them before they go off to college. So I'm sort of like, I don't need a side hustle right now. I need to work less, not more.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So, but there, you know, we've been kind of exploring some things that I can do with the Drummer Lab through the university, because really doing a lot of what I do in partnership with them, you know, works out best for both of us. You know, it sort of makes a, sure. you know, a good research affiliation for them, but for me, likewise, and also just facilitating a lot of, you know, so we, in my department, we have what's called the Center for Human Performance and Health.
Okay.
And so they do a lot of consulting with athletes. They do athletic testing. They run various programs, some of which I used to be a part of, for example, running exercise programs for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities,
okay.
where we pair undergrad students with an adult one-on-one to offer personal training for 12 weeks to help them get active and
yeah.
you know, build strength and whatever. So, you know, they do a lot of stuff like that. So, you know, partnering with them to offer workshops or consulting or things like that is something that I've definitely thought of and would like to do. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, the Drummer Lab specifically refers to the research happening in my lab at the university.
Okay. That's very cool. Yeah. 'Cause I noticed on one of your bios, I think it might've been on your faculty page, you had said something about, and I know it was a TV show at one point. It was at Wayne State. It was the sports, I think it was just like sports, like physical program. I forgot what it was called though. It was like a TV show they ran.
Sports science.
It was sports science. Right. Exactly. So you said something like, I would like this to kind of be sports science for drummers. Right. And essentially that's exactly what you're doing. Now, I would love it to be a TV show. I'd be a huge fan. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know if we get the university on board if they listen to this. Come on, University of Windsor.
Well, but, so what's cool about that sports science show is that, one of the head scientists behind it was one of my professors at Wayne State.
I was going to ask. Burr. Okay, cool.
Yeah, Dr. Cindy Burr. And she actually won a daytime Emmy for this.
Really?
But it was, so it was run through, I want to say it was like ESPN.
Yeah.
It was an ESPN series. So it wasn't actually Wayne State that was driving that. It was ESPN who had this like program they wanted to do. And they brought Cindy on as the scientific consultant to like set up all the fun data collections that they did. I would love to do something like that with drummers. It would be super fun.
We got to get like Drumeo involved. Yeah, come on, Drumeo. Let's back this up and do something like that. That'd be really cool.
That'd be outstanding. Yeah.
But it's like, shoot, man, when was that? Like 90, was that in early 2000s or something? I think that was running. Anyway, I liked it too because it showed, there's a big separation, obviously, being a doctor, PhD, and like going through this, you're an intellectual person where there's me that's like C's equal degrees. You know what I mean? Like I tried to get out and get my music stuff as far away as I could. And I'm not the one that's like, my wife has said several times, like, you should go get your master's in like something. And I'm just looking at her like, no, thank you. I'm good. I did school. School and I weren't the same. So there's definitely a difference in people across the board, and so throwing it onto a TV show but explaining the science but actually like showing it was super cool. So that's why I was like I was into that, and even like when you're posting things and you're posting like the calorie count and which song was better, like that to me is like that's so like anybody can understand that. Like if you're not even a fan of the band, it's like kind of like, here's the list of songs. Here's what's more aggressive. Here's where their heart rates like peaks. Like that stuff was so interesting. And I think across the board, it was just an interesting look and take on, oh, we're showing, like you had said in a couple of your talks, like you're showing the athleticism of this musician, which is not something, we're not all Mick Jagger. You know what I mean? Like we're not just bouncing around doing all this stuff, but drummers probably are the closest thing, you know, because of the movement and all this kind of other stuff, right? So,
thank you for saying that. Because when, you know, I probably my favorite thing about the Drummer Lab, and well, it's one of my favorite things because I have a lot of favorite things, but I, you know, for the first time, I'm really taking like the science that I'm doing and translating it in a way that is understandable and accessible to like beyond academic audiences.
Right.
And that's been fun for so many reasons because, you know, as a professor, like it's your job to publish.
Right.
And we usually do that, like some write books, some, you know, do journal articles. And then the only people who read those articles are other scientists.
Right. The words are too big. You know, like
the words are too big and the concepts are so detailed. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason why it's detailed the way it is, because you need to make sure that somebody else could go in and replicate what you do.
Yeah.
That's how we know that your theories are correct. When multiple groups do the same thing and get the same findings, you know, you were on the right track.
Right.
So anyway, but I love, you know, I love writing articles for Drumeo and I love coming on podcasts and being on Drum Talk TV and talking to the people who I ultimately want to use this knowledge.
Right.
You know, and benefit from this knowledge. So that's been just so much fun with all of this is being able to do that. And, you know, having an audience be so receptive to it and excited about it, you know, has been who weren't academics.
Right.
You know, was really, really awesome. It really does kind of make me want to do more of it because I'm like, okay, people are actually, you know, saying that like, oh, you know, I tried this. I used that. I didn't know that. Now I can teach people that. And it's, you know, that's like, oh, that's way better than hearing that, you know, some other scientist cited my paper.
Right. No, exactly.
Exciting.
Exactly. Right. Know? Yeah. And I, after we spoke, it was more of, I almost felt like a bad educator. Now, granted, you know, I'm doing it as, you know, I say a side hustle.
That wasn't the goal.
Well, no, it was more just because as we were talking, it was kind of like, are there things out there? Because, I mean, I talk to my students about proper stick handling. Here's why you don't do this. Here's why you don't do this, because you don't want to get hurt. And I go to the extreme. Oh, you want to point your finger on your stick. Oh, well, okay. Well, if you would like carpal tunnel and to look like this when you're my age, and they're like, what? You know, that's about as far as it goes. But it was like, now granted, some of my students, I can't give my, you know, 8-year-old student your article and be like, read this, you know, but it's more of, I kind of deep dove into, oh, I didn't do my due diligence as an educator. And because I think one of the questions at some point, you know, because it was like a free flow conversation. I know you had a list of questions, but it was more of just like, have you looked for things out there that allows you to explain it or give people stuff? And I kind of was like, oh, shoot, no. It's all just from my experience or talking to my friends that have gone through carpal tunnel surgery. One of my buddies just did it out in Atlanta. He just had to get carpal tunnel surgery, and I'm sitting there like, oh my gosh, like, sucks. It lays you out. I'm facing surgery on my ankle, not drum related, but it's laying me out for 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. My hands are going to get really good, but it's kind of like, what am I supposed to do? I don't have a bass drum foot, you know, kind of thing. So there's all of these different things that pile up. Number one is you get older, especially if you get older and you have improper technique as you're drumming, right? Mm-hmm. So I ended up deep diving. I found the Drumeo articles, it's just all these different things where it was just like, yes, like there is stuff out there, but you kind of got to look for it. It's not it is common knowledge. It's almost like an unspoken. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's out there kind of thing. And then I immediately think of the movie Rockstar. Right, with Dwight Schrute, whatever that guy's name was, Rainn Wilson, right? Where they show him like he's like my age in his 40s, and he's like touring with a bunch of teenagers, and then all of a sudden you see him like, oh, okay. Every now and then he dips his hands in ice, and then all of a sudden it's like now it's elbow, now it's whole arm, and then it gets to the point where he's like naked in a bathtub throwing ice on him, you know, because he's playing every day, but his body's completely sore. I mean, granted. Yeah. If you looked at the way he was playing as a drummer, you were probably like, well, that's why, you know, kind of thing. But it is that thing. Touring all over the place and playing a million shows, you know, a year or whatever, it's kind of like, oh, shoot, like your body aches. And it's not, granted, some of it's not only from drumming. It's dehydration from either alcohol or just not drinking enough water or not being healthy, eating like crap on the road, sitting in a random bunk or a hotel room or whatever. Like there's a lot of different things to it, but a lot of the hand aches, neck pain, back, like all of this goes back to like, oh, shoot. Number one, it's either improper technique or you're just not doing something just a little bit right. And so it does fall on educators, but it's also like it needs to, like, as the research grows and does more, it's like it becomes more common knowledge for like, I mean, we didn't know about CTE. And people still played football. And it's kind of that same thing. Mm-hmm. As it develops, like, there's kids that opt out, don't play. Helmet stuff has changed. Like, if you look at, like, all these things, there's research, it's the same stuff. How can we, as you're doing this, I feel like as it keeps growing, you know, fingers crossed, as it keeps growing, it's kind of like, oh, all of a sudden, I don't want to say carpal tunnel is going to go away, but it's just like proper technique will be more taught. It's like tackling. Do you teach kids to tackle better? Less concussions, you know, kind of thing. It all is kind of related in that same way, again, stemming back to athletics and stuff like that. But it made me literally focus, that one conversation we had, focus on, like, why am I telling these kids it's not safe to do that? You don't want to do that. And here's a proper technique, and here's why. I've definitely given and showed people that article since then. So thanks for having it out there. You know?
Oh, that's awesome. And that's so, again, that's so good to hear. I think the important thing, too, is that people need to have these conversations with their students. And sure. I get that it might be daunting for many people. So one of the problems with the study that we did is, and I have no way to control this, but I didn't get any participants who don't teach their students about injury prevention in some way.
Yeah.
And which is, on the one hand, is good. On the other hand, is also bad, because those are the ones that I wanted to hear from.
Sure.
Like, why? Because, and not to like point fingers or blame, to understand, why don't you? Is it because you don't have the information? Is it because you don't want to scare them away? Is it because you don't know what reputable sources of information are out there or how to deliver it, like, so that I can find ways to help navigate that.
Yeah.
But because one thing that I've found in my research is that, like, when I look at the rates of reporting injuries among drummers who had formal training and were taught something about injury prevention versus those who, even though they had formal training, were not specifically taught about injury prevention, there's a difference in the rates of reporting injuries in those two groups. The ones who were taught specifically about injury prevention report injuries at lower rates than the ones who, even though they took formal lessons, were not specifically taught about injuries. So what I take from that is that just teaching a student proper technique alone, without coming at it from that injury, or like incorporating injury prevention in there in some way, shape, or form, is not enough. That conversation about, yes, you're going to sound better, this is how it's, like, look at how your heroes play, you know, they're probably playing it this way instead of that way, you know, and in addition to all those things, like the benefits of proper technique for sound and musicianship and whatever, it's also going to help you play for longer because it'll help you prevent an injury. And it seems like just, you know, turning that switch on seems to have an impact.
Sure. Yeah.
So having that conversation with your students, even if you're not, even if the basics is just that, is that, oh yeah, and it'll help you, you know, you can actually get injured playing the drums.
Right.
And if you do it this way, you're less likely to.
Right.
That actually can help people avoid it. And, you know, it may not be that you have to go into this, like, super detailed lecture with all the, you know, diagrams and this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
It might just be enough of, like, and yeah, and oh, and okay, you know, if you're feeling this soreness, you need to tell someone, we need to change something, we need to, so just that awareness might help people recognize it sooner.
Sure.
And not let it get to the point where it is tendonitis, where it is carpal tunnel syndrome, where it is some other, you know, injury.
Yeah.
That is just like, yeah, I'm feeling this soreness, like, after I play and a little bit even during when I play. Oh, okay, let's watch. Oh yeah, you're doing this. Let's move this. Let's change that. And then it goes away before it becomes a major problem.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I having that conversation is so important. And I'm really hoping that more people will, like, through, you know, these podcasts and learning about it and getting the knowledge out there, is that, you don't have to necessarily have a, you know, kinesiology degree to teach your students about it. You just have to, like, have enough information to approach it to make them aware.
Right.
To recognize that there might be a problem.
Right. Right.
And you know?
It's scary to think, as a drummer, I can see it on the other side where it's like, drummers don't want to hear about this crap. You know what I mean? They don't, I'm going to live forever, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, no, man, you got to take care of yourself.
They do. And it's hard too, because with a lot of these, like, it seems like there's a bit of a, like, these injuries manifest in one of two ways. Either your technique is so bad that it happens right away.
Right.
And you hurt yourself and you know, you burn out or don't play anymore or whatever. Right. Be like, well, this sucks, I don't want to play this instrument.
Right.
Or everything's fine for multiple years until it finally catches up with you and now you have carpal tunnel syndrome.
Right.
So it's really hard to teach, you know, to get through to a 15-year-old kid that the way you're playing now might feel okay now, but it may not later.
Yeah, yeah. In 3 years when you're, exactly.
In 3 years, which is an eternity when you're 15.
Right, exactly.
You know, so it is tough. But that's why I think just the, like, consistent reinforcement, bringing it, like, maybe not beating a dead horse with it, but, like, you know, just bringing it up repetitively and often and in passing so that it just gets ingrained in there, that when they do start feeling something, like, oh yeah, my instructor said this might happen.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Well, even in a cool way, because even, like, some of the stuff that you would put out, like I said earlier, it was kind of like, it was interesting because, like, even it was just a graphic, you know, but with social media, how it is, you know, it's like that 15-second TikTok is just straight up like a, whatever it pops up, it's just like the graphic is like, there's a drummer drumming and you can see the improper technique and this is what's going through. Like, we can do these things and then watch kids go, oh crap, like, that's how I play, or I'm doing this, or I'm, you know what I mean? Like, all these different things. So, yeah, I mean, there's, there's a, I think a unique, powerful way we could do this now as the research develops, which is cool. I do want to say, for people that don't quite understand, again, like what we're talking about, you've defined things as a PRMD. Can you give me that definition and explain it?
Yeah. So I think we used that acronym earlier.
Yeah.
We haven't.
I know what it means, though. Okay.
So a PRMD stands for playing related musculoskeletal disorder. Mm-hmm. So that is the kind of injury. It's an injury that happens as a direct result of playing an instrument, mm-hmm. and they develop over time related to activities related to that instrument. So mm-hmm. it's not unique to drumming. It's PRMDs happen in guitarists, pianos, violinists, like brass players,
yeah.
woodwinds, everybody. But the different types of injuries are dependent on, the nature of the instrument. Mm-hmm. So PRMD stands for that kind of disorder. It's sort of like it's analogous to a work-related musculoskeletal
right.
disorder. So like somebody who develops back pain at work because they do a lot of lifting. That's what we would call a WMSD. So a PRMD is the same kind of idea, except the occupational activity is playing an instrument and it's related to play. Even though playing the instrument might be working,
right.
we're defining it as PRMD because it's related to playing or performance. Even some people call it performance related musculoskeletal disorder. But
Right. Yeah. Because this could happen
to represent the same thing.
Right. Because this could happen to the hobbyist. You know what I mean? Like a guy that
yeah.
just plays drums, like works a 9-to-5, is killing it. And then he comes home and his outlet is going to play drums,
mm-hmm.
could have a PRMD and
yeah.
either not know it or what, you know, like there's definitely, I like how it's player related or performance related either way, but like, yeah, it's not limited to just professional musicians or people that do it, you know,
no.
more often than the hobbyist, you know? So
absolutely. Yep.
What would you, I guess what are the, obviously we've talked about carpal tunnel. What are some that you've found that people may just be like, oh crap, I do have that or something like what are some that mm-hmm. you, even like I said, shoulder pain, but what are some of the medical, like, I mean, I say like, you could say like, oh, I got a bad back. Well, no, it's not a bad back. Like you have some sort of weird, get medical with me. Like when these things happen, like what are some that you have found outside of carpal tunnel? Because everybody knows what that is. That people would just be like, oh, and like, all of a sudden stars would align and be like, oh my gosh, I have this.
So tendonitis is a big one.
Yeah,
and that can happen in pretty much anywhere there's a tendon, which is
right.
the structure that attaches your muscles to your bones.
That's what I'm dealing with now with my Achilles, which is the worst.
So drummers might see tendonitis. They might get tendonitis in their wrists. Mm-hmm. They could get it on either side of their elbow. So
yep.
golfer's elbow is on this side, tennis elbow is on this side, but it's related to movement of the wrist,
okay.
especially high force movement. So think about, smacking a cymbal,
right.
even backhanded. You got, so you're drawing on the muscles that attach right here. So if you've got elbow pain, that could be tendonitis related to those tendons,
mm-hmm.
Shoulder issues, bursitis. So a bursa is this little like sort of fluid filled sacs that kind of are placed strategically through your body to kind of help your tendons glide in certain ways. Those can become irritated and inflamed as a result of repetitive movement as well. Those are the two biggest ones that I've found through the research were tendonitis and carpal tunnel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there are avenues, I've seen, there were cases reported of sciatica, which is
yeah.
related to your sciatic nerve, which comes out of your lower, like mid to lower back and feeds your legs. So if you're getting that like shooting pain down your legs, that's sciatica.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially drummers who, play a lot of like double bass or a lot of speed, like heavy footwork, could have some ankle issues, again, tendonitis,
yeah. Yeah.
With Achilles tendon or just ankle, mobility or any of those. I mean, the foot is an incredibly complicated structure, so there's a lot of stuff.
I should send you my MRI. You would be like, wow, this is crazy. Just to see my bone spur and all the issues that I got going, it's like, oh my gosh, it's crazy. But yeah, it's nuts
to look actually,
at.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing any reports of bone spurs from drumming.
Yeah, mine was not drummer related, but it's
yeah.
going to affect it, but yeah.
For sure, yeah. But that's certainly something. I mean, and even, you know, we don't usually think about arthritis as a, you know, PRMD or a work-related thing, because it's, you know, arthritis is typically something that, you know, as you age, what have you. But if you've been doing, like, there's a reason why athletes are more prone to arthritis than the general population. When you're doing something, there's a reason why, like, the average football player retires by the time they're 26.
Right.
And have terrible knees after.
Right.
You know, things like that. It's the constant wear and tear on your joints, the cartilage lining, the surfaces of your joints are eventually going to start to wear down, and might wear down faster from, you know, engaging in vigorous activity like playing the drums.
Yeah.
So arthritis could certainly be something that you could see maybe a little earlier onset of, you know, than the average person. So those are some that I would say are the ones that I hear about.
Yeah.
You know, more often, I guess.
Would you classify?
I was actually really surprised that neck issues didn't come up. They did.
That was my question. Yeah, that was going to be my question.
Yeah. So they definitely, I had people who reported neck.
Yeah.
Related PRMDs. But not nearly to the degree that I thought they would, because I see a lot of drummers who play like this.
Right.
You know, they've got their head, you know, really head forward posture.
Yeah.
And that is really stressful on your neck. And so I was really surprised that I didn't see more of that.
Right.
But it was there. It was definitely there.
Yeah, my question related that, not that I have neck pain or anything. It's not, I mean, it probably is drumming related, but because of the shoulder stuff, right? And again, because our movements are there and we're using these shoulder muscles, that's tied directly to the neck. So it's like you would think that the trapezius, like that would be pulling and tight and constantly inflamed, and that would start causing issues. So I was actually shocked that you said there wasn't as much. So interesting. That's super interesting.
Yeah. So one of the things that, and again, this was a survey that I did.
Yeah.
So I really didn't, it's not like I looked at people's like diagnostic charts and medical histories.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what could be manifesting as symptoms of carpal tunnel or other neurological things, like the nerves that feed your hand come out, you know, in your lower neck, upper back area.
Yeah.
And so if you're, you know, they come out of the side of your spinal column.
Yeah.
So if your head's like this all the time and your muscles are tight, those nerves travel through the muscles and between them. And if they're getting compressed, that's going to send the tingly shooting stuff down your hand. And so there may, again, because I wasn't asking for, I mean, I did ask if they got a medical diagnosis from a professional, but again, it's a survey. I didn't, you know, cross-reference this.
Right.
They could have, you know, and even if a medical professional hears, I've got shooting and tingling pain in my hand, carpal tunnel syndrome. But that might actually be a problem up here that's manifesting down here.
Wow. Interesting.
So, So that might be part of why the neck didn't come up as often, even though I definitely think it plays a role. Because everything is connected. That's the thing, right? You know, and if you have a problem in one area, your other muscles will compensate.
Yeah.
And then that can lead to fatigue because those muscles are doing something they were never really intended to do to the degree that you're asking them to.
Right.
And so they get, you know, fatigued and sore and all that kind of stuff and cause more problems.
Right.
So
have you ever thought about, I mean, granted, again, I know you're busy and I'm not trying to throw ideas at you, but like, have you thought about taking an older population of drummers, whether they be a casual drummer or old professional drummers that have retired or they're just old, you know, have you ever talked or thought about taking them in and actually giving them x-rays, MRIs, if they would do something like that, so you could actually physically see these issues that could possibly arise, like you just described, like, no, his nerves are pinched up here. And like, have you ever thought about doing anything like that? Or I mean, that seems like a more of an elaborate, extensive study or even an ask for some of these guys, but it's more just like, as it progresses, it's kind of like, I feel like eventually that's where we're going to get to, you know, at some point, you know, if anybody will allow, I'll sign up to be a lab rat any day. I'm fine with it. So, but it's more of the, what would that even entail? Like, you know, how could you even find a way to do that? I mean, it really, can you see like what you were describing? Could you say like, this is causing this, or I can show you this exact little thing that's coming from your neck that's causing this? I mean, could you pinpoint mm-hmm. that, or could you find a way to do that?
I mean, it really depends on what the issue, like if the muscle is getting, or sorry, if the nerve is getting compressed as it's traveling through muscles,
yeah,
there's not really a good way to image that.
Sure. Yeah.
But you know, if your the nerve roots, which are like the parts that come out of your spinal column,
right,
they come out of like the tiniest little hole,
right,
that if
right.
your bones are shifted in a certain way, that hole gets even smaller. And that you would be able to see on, say, an x-ray of like, okay, look at the way your, you know, your neck is shifted like this. We can see that this hole, you know, this is very small. That's
yeah.
probably causing part of the problem, or like bulging discs or things like that.
Right.
You know, those things are visible. The problem with doing, I mean, certainly imaging-based studies have their value. I'm not saying they don't. The trouble with it is it's a snapshot in time.
Right. Yeah, sure.
So it's here's what this is right now.
Yeah.
It doesn't, we can only say, so I could say like, you know, okay, yes, there's a fracture of a vertebrae, or there's a bulging disc, and that is probably causing the symptom, that is consistent with the symptoms you're reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is directly the result, like, I don't know that I could necessarily ever prove that came from
yeah.
drumming.
Yeah.
I can look at how you play. I could look at videos and say, it's probably because of, like, I'm looking at your posture. That is likely, if you played like this for 20 years, that's
right.
probably what's happening now.
Right.
But there are, you know, does that drummer have a day job and they work on a computer with a terrible ergonomic setup? Is it that, or is
right.
it the drumming?
Right.
So it's hard to, you know, to conclusively say, it's this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're always dealing in probabilities and likelihoods, and you know, it's probably this. The signs are pointing to this, but can I give you a rock solid, concrete yes? This is why that happened.
Right.
No, I can't.
That's got to be hard, right? Is that a hard like fact and thing to swallow? Is just like, I can show you, and I believe it's this, but I can't give you 100%. You know, like.
It is, because people want, naturally, people want absolutes.
Right.
Right. And even in, like, say, a courtroom,
mm-hmm.
like, I had my professors and now, you know, former lab mates who are forensic engineers who, you know, evaluate car crashes and determine, you know, serve as expert witnesses
yeah.
to testify, like, yeah, this injury probably came from this, you know, based on the details of this car crash,
yeah.
this is what I think happened. And I was always like, I never want to do that. I don't care how much money they get paid for
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Because it's very, you can't say conclusively, I can say based on my expertise in the physics of how this and that happened and how what we know how about how the body responds, it was probably that.
Yeah.
But if a lawyer's like, you have to tell me yes or no, I'd be like,
yeah.
I can't, then no, I can't.
Right.
I can't say yes,
yeah.
so I have to say no. And so that's, yeah, that's the hard part.
That's crazy. I mean, yeah. That's not only just like your side of things. Like you said, like, man, to get pressure from lawmakers or like whoever, it's just kind of like, oh my gosh, to give a definitive answer and put yourself out there as like a, I'm saying yes, and then all of a sudden you're discredited because that is not true, you know, kind of thing. That's a hard thing to ask someone, you know. So
yeah, and one of the, and I mean, we're seeing it in real time over the last 3 years of the pandemic,
yeah,
is
yeah,
that
yeah.
science by nature changes.
Right.
So I can tell you today what I know, or give you an opinion based on what I know today.
Yeah.
In 3 years, my knowledge hopefully will be different. And I will either say, we were actually right about that. Or, oh, you know what?
Yeah.
This study showed this and that showed that. And so we kind of have to change it. I'm not backpedaling.
Right.
I'm updating my perspective based
yeah.
on new information.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, we're watching it happen in real time, and people are reacting to it like the scientists are not trustworthy. And it's like, no, science is doing exactly what it is intended to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, right.
It's just, we can't give you, you know, our absolutes change.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
You mentioned COVID. How did COVID impact all of your studies and like in research? Obviously, there was no shows, so you couldn't do anything. It's like, how did that, I mean, this 2 to 3 year chunk of, oh crap, what are we doing? How did that impact all of this?
Yeah, it effectively shut it all down.
Yeah, yeah.
It was probably, 18 months before we could get back in the lab to do stuff.
Oh, wow, okay.
My grad students, their studies were delayed.
Yeah.
And then like the pandemic was like, okay, we're back. Nope, Omicron. Oh my God, we got to stop everything again. It was just like constantly. I did more paperwork in the last year and a half than I did like in the 5 years preceding that.
Jeez.
So that was difficult because like things were stagnating, obviously, with the live shows. And even when live shows came back, you know, I do a lot of my data collection in Michigan because Detroit's a stop on most major tours.
Right.
So, but I couldn't cross the border.
Oh, you couldn't cross?
First, I couldn't cross at all. Then I couldn't cross without having a COVID test, like a negative test coming back.
Right.
And it just became, and then with, you know, the university had lots of safeguards in place, restrictions around COVID exposure and making sure we're not like putting people, our participants or our staff at risk of getting sick. And as you know, with a touring artist, like I don't want to be the one who shut down someone's tour because I've got COVID into their backstage area, you know, that sort of thing. So it was that I did my first show back in June of 2022. So it was like a good 2.5 years.
Wow.
Because I did my last data collection in December of 2019.
Yeah.
And then I had a whole pile of them scheduled for like March, April, June of 2020.
Yeah.
And all of that had to go. So
does that skew the data at all because of this huge gap that's in there? Does that manipulate the data coming out of it?
No, because I'm not, again, all that data is a snapshot in time.
Right. Oh,
so
sure.
It'd be a real problem if I was trying to follow people over the long term.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I actually just in November, I collected data on the drummer for Simple Plan, Chuck Como again. So he had done my study twice in 2018. Shows were like 3 days apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a show in Windsor and he's like, you want to do it again? I'm like, yeah, let's do this just for fun. And so I made, you know, I showed him the data and I made some comparisons, but it's really, you know, with that much time in between, it's really hard to say why we saw or didn't see any differences. The show was longer. It was an indoor venue versus an outdoor venue. You're 4 years older.
Yeah.
We just went through a pandemic. You may have, I don't know if he had COVID, but you may have had COVID 2 or 3 times or once, or who knows. Like, so there's so many possible factors. So if I was trying to do that, yes, that would definitely be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm just trying to show, here's what this is on this day.
Yeah.
At this show.
Yeah.
Here's what was happening. So the fact that I have a bunch of people from 2017, 18, 19, and now I'm starting to get a few more in 2022, they're all pooled together as individual moments in time. So it doesn't really impact that. And I had people running the gamut of ages. I think the age range was somewhere in the late 20s. Up to the late 50s.
Okay.
Maybe even older than that. I'm trying to think now. But anyway, so like it's not like, oh, they got older, so it's a problem. Like,
right.
Again, everything's a snapshot in time, and that's how I'm dealing with the data.
Sure.
So it didn't have an issue that way.
Okay, cool. You had done a friend of mine, and he's actually been on the podcast, Jeremy Furstenfeld of Blue October. So we're label mates. So I've known them for years and we've done a tour together and it was awesome to see. That's I knew when I was following you before and like all the research, but then when that happened, I texted him. I'm like, "What the heck? That's awesome." You know, blah blah blah. And so with his results, and you probably don't remember, and I pulled this up when I was quote unquote researching to talk to you, but they're one of their slowest songs on that tour they did, his heart rate was the fastest.
Yeah.
Did you find that weird? Like,
totally.
Is that common? Okay, that's the thing. I didn't know if that was something common or if it was more of the placement of where it was in the set or just whatever. But yeah, his, like, I forgot which song it was now, but yeah, the slowest song in the set, really, was his heart rate had spiked. And it was like, I found that really interesting. Granted, playing like 70 shows with those guys over the years, it was just funny because we're always talking about like and laughing. I mean, we play completely different, Jeremy and I. So it's more just kind of like a funny, like I saw that and I texted him and he's just like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what my heart rate's doing at this point. So
I'm trying to think if it was his heart rate or if it was the energy expenditure.
Oh, and you know what? I don't even remember. Maybe it was the other one. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it might have been his energy expenditure, and that could be because of a few different things. It could have had to do with the placement in the set. If he was coming off a couple more higher intensity songs, it takes some time for, you know, things to settle down. And so that might have been artificially inflated. I don't think it was necessarily, or no, there was something with like the most intense song in the set. We were both kind of like, huh.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
That's funny.
I mean, the heart rate, and this is part of why I like to use a couple different ways to sort of quantify the intensity of playing is the thing with heart rate is it's not only impacted by your movement, it's impacted by your emotions.
Sure.
So if there was a particular, if that song was, okay, maybe it's mellow, but it's particularly challenging.
Yeah.
It's more complicated playing. There's a part that I'm not super confident on. I haven't played this song in a while. I hope I don't screw it up.
Right.
You know, so any of those things could inflate or increase your heart rate over and above what you physically need it for.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that might have been part of it too. I don't know. He didn't say anything to that effect, but there was also something too. I think that song he was using brushes.
Yep.
Instead of sticks.
Yes.
And I remember having a bit of a conversation with him about that too, that there may have been something related to that, that you know, skewed things a little bit.
And like you said, it could be subconscious. It could all just be like, maybe he was nervous because he was holding brushes different. Or, you know what I mean? Like, who knows? And he could be like, I don't know. Like,
or his hands were sweaty and he was worried that they were going to fall out of his hand. Like, you know, there are any number of things.
See, this is why I just find this stuff completely fascinating. And like I said it before, it's just like you're just finding different ways to like show us different things. And I don't know, like especially when it's the live show and you strap everybody up and you have all these monitors, I don't know, you get results that you're just kind of like, oh, and you know, look at it. It's like when I'm teaching. I like actually taking videos of my students because then they can't argue with me about, no, I've been playing it right. You haven't been playing it right. And here's why. Like, it's kind of that same screen, like that shot, like moment in time that you were saying, where it's just like, no, you're tired at the end of your set because the slowest song, you're like, you know, your energy expenditure and your heart rate and everything is skyrocketing because number one, you're either nervous about it or like you said, all these different, you know, things could be happening that you don't know. And then now that you know that, maybe you can control it and change it and do whatever, which is if as a drummer, as a performer, that is cool. That's good knowledge, I think, for us to have too, where it's just like, oh, okay, I'm doing this fine. I shouldn't be nervous. Or it's this subconscious preconceived thing that like, maybe it was brushes. Maybe it was, it could have been anything. Maybe if that was a different spot in the set, it wouldn't be that way. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's cool research to like, the drummer can now be like, hey, we shouldn't play this song last. We should play this song third, you know, or something like, who knows?
Definitely. Like, that's kind of the whole, like, cause people ask me like, so when is this done? Like when, I mean, I've worked with almost 50 drummers by now. They're like, how much more do you really need? And I'm like, at this point, I'm not even really doing it for the science end of it. I'm doing it because I get people reaching out to me saying like, you gotta do me next.
Or
because people want their own information for themselves.
Right.
And I mean, it's super fun for me.
Right.
So why wouldn't I want to do it?
Right.
And it gives people stuff that they can, and I can certainly use it for research.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll keep doing it until there are drummers that don't want to do it anymore.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think as it keeps growing, I think there's more and more, the audience is getting bigger and bigger. And I think it's awesome. I didn't have any more questions. I think this is great. So I appreciate you being on and and just shedding more knowledge on what you're doing and stuff for the drumming community. It's super cool, and I appreciate you and everything you're doing. So thank you again for being on here. And if there's anything else you need to say or you'd like to say, or any upcoming projects you need people for, just let us know.
Okay. Well, no, thank you for inviting me to be on your podcast. Yeah. Like I said, I love doing these. It was nice to see you again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would say is if people are looking for information, because we've talked about articles and things, the best place to find that, if it's coming from me, are my social media, which I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and on TikTok, but I haven't done a whole lot on there yet. But they're all the same handle. It's at Dr. Not, like Dr. Nadia Azar.
Yep.
So at Dr. Nadia Azar. And in my bio, I'm pretty sure for all of them, I have a link tree. So anytime I've got an article published or a link to a Dremio or a, if I can link to a YouTube podcast presentation I've given, I try to link it all there so that all the information is in one place. So if you're looking for information, that's probably the best place to start, at least in terms of work that I've done, which might then lead you to other things too. Cool. So
that's awesome. Well, it was great to see you. Thank you so much for everything, and we will talk soon. And hey, seriously, if you ever need a lab rat and I'm up in Detroit, man, I'll come over and you can poke and prod me, and I got all kinds of stuff going on, so we'll figure it out.
But, yeah, absolutely. Actually, I am still collecting data on for the vibration study. I don't know if I told you about that one.
No.
But for that one, people have to come to my lab.
Okay.
So if you're ever in the area and you want to come to the lab, let me know.
Well, when you're asking people, is it all through social media and just people and like kind of word of mouth when you're asking drummers to do it? Or I mean, I know you're putting stuff out there on the internet and stuff, but is it more, do you need drummers to come over?
Like, no, I definitely on my socials, I post the calls for participants, but I am still actively recruiting for that study to have people come to my lab. And as long as they can get to the lab, like it's not a funded study, so I can't pay for travel expenses and stuff.
Right, right.
So as long as they can get or are willing to get to the lab, and they, you know, they meet the study criteria, which for that one, I think it's just, you have to have, I think it's at least 5 years experience playing the drums, can't have any injuries, current injuries.
Sure.
And need to play for at least 5 hours a week for about the last 2 years.
Awesome. Well, good to see you again. Again, I appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
Great. Well, you take care.
You too.
Have a good one.
Yep. See ya.
Bye.
I want to thank Dr. Nadia for coming on Boom Chuck, a Drummer's Podcast. It was a great conversation to have. It's always informative. And I, appreciate researchers out there doing work that's just going to make drummers better drummers. I'm all about that. So if you could, please follow her. Check her out. Like she said, it's Dr. Nadia Azar on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, or you can just look up The Drummer Lab and everything is there. All of her articles or most of her articles are going to be on her link tree that's within all of those bios. Please check it out. Make yourselves better. Make yourselves a better drummer, a better educator. Let's do this as a community. And if you actually need or want to participate in one of her studies, like I said at the end, just go ahead. Just check her socials. She's going to be putting stuff out. If you're in the Detroit, Windsor area anytime on tour or anything like that and you're able to do it, I'm sure there's going to be something in the need that's, again, going to make us better as a community, and smarter drummers make better drummers, make long-lasting drummers. So, again, my name is Chris Phillips. This was Boom Chuck, a Drummer's Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Boom Chuck. And I just want to say thank you guys again for listening.